I often try to get people to imagine what it would be like to go to their first job interview. This is an example that was actually taught to me by some of my Confucian teachers, so I'm not straying too far from the tradition itself. When you go to your first job interview, you're trying to imagine what it would be like to fit in a harmonious but somewhat respectful and strong way into a human organization that you want to play a productive part in. First thing you have to do is you open the door, walk into the room, and meet an interviewer is simply shake hands. You got to shake hands. And imagine what that simple ritual actually involves. It conveys a lot from one person to another in our culture. You want to have a firm handshake. You want it to last just the right amount of time. It has to convey a sense of respect to the other person, but also a sense of self-respect and stability in yourself. A lot can be conveyed by just simply that basic gesture of human relationship. In this Confucian vision of the world, society is made up out of millions of little interactions like that, where there is a certain understood, prescribed way of doing things, a good way to express respect for the other person and also at the same time express a certain sense of self-confidence and groundedness and wisdom about your own position in the world. And it's not too far-fetched to imagine that this is something that a freshman might want to cultivate a little bit in college, not just have all the fun that you want to do as you go out and leave the classroom and, well, I won't even speculate about what people do when they leave the classroom. There, of course, is a lot of that in college. But there also is an opportunity to develop a sensitivity to some of these basic rituals that tie human society together. It was really out of this simple insight that Confucianism flourished during the Han Dynasty. It obviously is based on an assumption that society is rather stable and there are roles that are prescribed for us that we can play with a certain degree of gracefulness and effectiveness. When society begins to fall apart, then a lot of this stuff is up for grabs. And that's what happened at the end of the Han Dynasty and created an opportunity for the coming of Buddhism. In the middle of the second century, the Han synthesis began to fall apart in ways that are pretty easy to understand. The emperor became weak and came under the influence of a lot of rival factions in the court and also in the countryside. He no longer had the power or the moral force. This is as important as the physical power to guarantee the legitimacy of the state. And as factions struggled for power, the peasantry, the common people, who in some ways are really the backbone of Chinese society, became increasingly alienated and oppressed. Eventually, a great rebellion broke out that caused tremendous turmoil in the rural regions of China and was suppressed with great bloodshed and seriously weakened the empire. And as far as the intellectuals go, they looked for new ways to diagnose and to respond to what they perceived to be the moral malaise of the times. They no longer could really give the same kind of respect and credibility to old ways of thinking about Chinese society as the structure of Chinese civilization simply disintegrated around them. So China was really ripe for the introduction of new ideas, even ideas as foreign as Buddhism. And it's hard to imagine a system of ideas that could be as strange in relation to traditional Chinese ways of thinking as the tradition of the Buddha from India. So as Buddhist monks and travelers and merchants made their way up into China as they moved over the mountains in Afghanistan and into Central Asia and as they came across the great trade routes through the Silk Road and began to communicate Buddhist ideas in a Chinese setting, they faced several obvious but difficult barriers. First of all, Sanskrit and Chinese were radically different as languages and as systems of thought. We've talked about Sanskrit really as a complex language, capable of expressing quite sophisticated philosophical distinctions. Chinese is much more down to earth. It's monosyllabic, doesn't have all of these long words like the Sanskrit word pratityasamutpada or the name of Avalokiteshvara or any of those long Sanskrit terms that we've thrown around in our discussion of Indian Buddhism.